Hi, welcome to the Growth Dummy summary of the book Contagious by Jonah Berger. Contagious shows how entrepreneurs and marketers can make their content more viral and products more shareable. Jonah Berger simplified years of his research into six principles of contagiousness, which are social currency, triggers, emotion, public, practical value, and stories. Our top quote from this book is, "Word of mouth is the primary factor behind 20% to 50% of all purchasing decisions," end quote. So who is Jonah Berger and why listen to him? Well, he's a professor at Wharton Business School in Pennsylvania, a very good school. He's seen as an expert in marketing and social science because he's written 3 books, he's published over 50 articles in academic journals, and he's been featured in media like the New York Times and Harvard Business Review. In this book, Jonah Berger shows us how to succeed with social media using advice that is both practical and, even more importantly, science-based. In a world of 1 million self-proclaimed social media experts, that's a breath of fresh air. It feels like most business teachers today are talking about social media. We all love the idea that other people will promote our business for free on Facebook, YouTube, and other platforms. But while it's true that word-of-mouth marketing is very powerful, most businesses do not know how to succeed with social media. I mean, I'm sure we've all had the experience of starting a new social media account and then getting almost no likes or shares aside from some friends. But hey, at least Aunt Becky liked my post, right? Well, if you want people to pay attention to your posts and share them, then you need to understand the psychology behind what makes people share. And I have some good news. Professor Jonah Berger spent years researching the science of contagiousness, and in this book, he simplified what he learned into 6 principles. Those principles are 1, social currency, which is people share things that make them look good in the eyes of others. 2 is triggers, which means you can make people remember your product more often and therefore increase word of mouth by designing these triggers. 3 is emotions. People share things that arouse strong feelings in them, both positive and negative feelings. 4 is public. People naturally imitate what they see others doing, so make sure your product is used in some publicly visible way. 5 is practical value. People like to share useful information. And 6 is stories. Information can be embedded into stories because people find stories very easy to remember and share. So those are the 6 principles in short, and now in this book summary, we'll explore them in a little more detail. And hopefully, by the time we're finished, you too will know how to make your idea spread across the world, infecting minds like a virus. In a good way, of course. So let's start with lesson 1. Give people something to share that makes them look good. People like to share things about themselves. Scientific studies show we're actually wired to find self-sharing pleasurable. Yet, what makes us share some things about ourselves and not other things? Well, Jonah Berger says, here's a quote from the book, "We share things that make us look good," end quote. We all want to be seen a certain way by other people. Some might call that superficial and selfish, but it's also totally natural and human. People want to be seen as in demand, attractive, successful, smart, cool, and virtuous. Now, we all know this is true right away, but we usually don't think about it. Yet, of course, when we post a new profile photo online, we want it to show us at our best. And beyond photos, we also share the activities that make us look good to our peer groups. So, for example, if you're a 20-year-old guy, then you might post a selfie working out, which makes you look disciplined, driven, and on the path to success. If you're a 40-year-old woman, you might post a photo of a fancy restaurant meal, which makes you look glamorous and maybe somewhat wealthy. If you're a 60-year-old, then you probably can't figure it out how to plug in your smartphone, so this example doesn't work. Don't worry, I'm just kidding. Lots of older people are great on social media now, too. On the other hand, we don't want to be seen as certain things too, right? We don't want to be seen as unpopular, unattractive, or unsuccessful. I mean, that's why nobody, almost nobody, would share a selfie before going on a 10-hour Netflix marathon, or nobody's going to post a photo of their crumpled McDonald's burger. Here's another quote from the book. When we talk to others, we're not only communicating information, we're also saying something about ourselves. When we rave about a new foreign film or express disappointment with the Thai restaurant around the corner, we're demonstrating our cultural and culinary knowledge and taste, end quote. So this is the first principle, and it is called social currency. Things that make us look good are almost like a currency. We can use them to buy ourselves a better social reputation. I mean, we all know that the guy who's posting a photo of himself riding a Ferrari, he bought that car for social currency. But the truth is that we all do that type of behavior in more subtle or tasteful ways, even when we're not consciously aware of it. So next time you're posting on social media, ask yourself, how can someone in my audience look good by sharing this? Not how can you look good by sharing it, but how can other people look good sharing your content? And if you stop to think about it this way, then you'll find that your messages are much more likely to be shared. Here's an example. Yogi Surprise is a monthly subscription box for yoga lovers. It's a little online business. So people sign up for $45 per month and receive a monthly box of yoga-related goodies. Now, yoga intrinsically makes someone look good because they appear to be healthy, attractive, and maybe open-minded. So at the time I was running this summary on their homepage, this Yogi Surprise business, they were featuring photos of their own users. Their own users had actually posted on Instagram when they received the box, the product, and they were expressing their happiness with the product. So their own users were spreading the word about this product. And I think that's because it is some social currency appearing into yoga. Obviously, if you sell something related to yoga, then that naturally fits with this social currency much better. You know, people feel much better sharing that they like to do yoga than, you know, if they use adult diapers or whatever. And by the way, I'm not trying to put down yoga at all. I really love to meditate. I'm just pointing this out as one example of how people choose what to share and how maybe you can build your business around that. I mean, this business, Yogi Surprise, they're getting a lot of free marketing on Instagram because they work this angle. So a summary of this first lesson, we all want to share things about ourselves that make us look good, successful, in demand, attractive, and virtuous. That's why we post a photo of a nice restaurant meal, but not our quick lunch at McDonald's. So think about how you can give your audience a message or some content to share that makes them look great. And now lesson two. Surprise people with something new and they are much more likely to share. Here's another quote. Sharing extraordinary, novel, or entertaining stories or ads makes people seem more extraordinary, novel, and entertaining themselves. It makes them more fun to talk to, more likely to get asked to lunch, and more likely to get invited back for a second date. End quote. So one effective way to create social currency is through surprise. We like to share things that are surprising, new, and different to our friends. Why? Probably because it helps us avoid being seen as boring, predictable, and stale ourselves. So how can you or your product be surprising? It's not as difficult as you might expect. Jonah sums it up with this great quote. One way to generate surprise is by breaking a pattern people have come to expect, end quote. Once you understand that surprise is created by breaking an expectation, then you're going to see this happening all over your social media. I'll give you an example. There was one video from the TV show Britain's Got Talent that received almost 250 million views. Why? I mean, it was a video of a 47-year-old woman named Suzanne Boyle. She doesn't look pretty, and when she walks on stage, everyone expects her voice to match her plain appearance. The judges even kind of poke fun at her. Some of the audience members are making little faces at her because they expect the pop star to be very beautiful. And then she opens her mouth and starts singing, and she has one of the most beautiful voices you've ever heard. Everyone is amazed, and she receives a standing ovation. one of the TV hosts of this show, they even say, "Didn't expect that, did you?" a few seconds after she starts singing the first notes. If you want to see this video, I posted it on the written summary at growth.me, so go check it out. So people expect that a very attractive woman will have a very attractive voice. I mean, that's in our culture, most of the pop stars and music stars who are women, they have that certain beauty standard. People also expect then that an unattractive woman to have an unattractive voice. And when this expectation is shattered, they feel an incredible surge of emotion. Then they want to share the video with their family and friends. Now, even if what you sell is a boring product, there's probably a way you can make it surprising. Here's another example. This is from the book. BlendTech was a company that was selling blenders since 1999. But the problem was that nobody really knew their brand. And then one day, the founder had an idea to start a YouTube channel called Will It Blend? And then he made many videos where he blended random objects like golf balls, magnets, iPhones, anything. So we all expect that someone will put vegetables into a blender, and BlendTech broke that expectation. As a result, many of their videos received over 10 million views and they became very popular. Best of all, their sales also increased by 700%. So, summary of this lesson: when we are surprised by something, we feel a surge of emotion, which makes us more likely to share. Creating surprises is about predicting what people expect to happen and then doing something that breaks that pattern of expectation. And now lesson three: make your product harder to get and people will want it more. Here's a quote: "If something is difficult to obtain, people assume that it must be worth the effort. If something is unavailable or sold out, people often infer that lots of other people must like it, and so it must be pretty good." End quote. So another form of social currency is when a product is scarce, exclusive, or difficult to get. If you can get something not many other people can get, that must imply that you have some extra resources, some special access, or higher status. As a result, we are also more likely to share things that imply that we have obtained something scarce or exclusive. It makes us look good. Now, this doesn't just apply to luxury products, because part of human nature is we want and value things more when they are harder to get or appear to be so. Jonah Berger looked at a few studies and found that, quote, "People evaluate cookbooks more favorably when they are in limited supply, find cookies tastier when they are scarce, and perceive pantyhose as higher end when it's less available," end quote. So if you want to instantly make anything more popular, then restrict access to it. During your college years, did you ever stand outside a bar or nightclub in a line for 20 minutes only to walk inside and discover that there were only a few people inside? Well, the owners of those clubs, they know that if the club looks empty, then nobody will wait in line, nobody will want to go there. But if it looks already popular, then more and more people will join the line. Another example is McDonald's with their McRib sandwich. You see, when McDonald's first introduced this sandwich, it was a total failure, and they had to take it off the menu. However, many years later, some McDonald's executive decided to try bringing the McRib back as a limited-time product. Now, that one change suddenly made the McRib incredibly popular. When people knew they couldn't buy it anytime they wanted to, suddenly they wanted it more because it was scarce and harder to get. Summary of this lesson: when a product is scarce or exclusive, then we naturally value it more. Being able to obtain something exclusive also implies that we have some qualities like connections or wealth or status, and this makes it another form of social currency, news we are more likely to share. And now lesson four: connect your product to triggers that help people remember and share. Here's a quote: "If you see a puppy while jogging in the park, you might remember that you've always wanted to adopt a dog. If you smell Chinese food while walking past the quarter noodle shop, you might start thinking about what to order for lunch. Or if you hear an advertisement for Coke, you might remember that you ran out of soda last night. Sights, smells, and sounds can trigger related thoughts and ideas, making them more top of mind, end quote. If you want to make people share your message, product, or business more often during their everyday life, then you need to somehow trigger their memory. You see, if people don't remember your product when they're with their friends, then there's no chance they'll be talking about it. Now, this isn't as difficult as it might sound, because people's memories are constantly being triggered by things around them. This is the secret reason, I think, why so many companies give away free pens, cups, and t-shirts. If your dentist gives you a calendar with their phone number on it, then you'll probably be reminded of the dentist in some small way every time you look at it or write down an important date. And that, of course, will make you more likely to call their office to make an appointment. Here's another example. Kit Kat chocolate bars had become very popular with their advertising campaign based on the slogan, "Give me a break." But around 2007, they were running into some problems and sales were down. So Hershey gave Colleen Chorak the job of saving the product brand with a fresh new advertising campaign. So her idea was she knew that most people drink coffee a couple times a day, so she wanted to make them think of Kit Kat every time they had a coffee. This campaign was very successful. Here's how Berger explains it in the book. Quote, "The radio spots featured the candy bar sitting on a counter next to a cup of coffee, or someone grabbing coffee and asking for a Kit Kat. Kit Kat and coffee. Coffee and Kit Kat. The two spots repeatedly paired the two together. The campaign was a hit. By the end of the year, it had lifted sales by 8%. After 12 months, sales were up by a third. Kit Kat and coffee put Kit Kat back on the map. The then $300 million brand has since grown to $500 million. End quote. So here's an opposite example that shows how we can also trigger healthy eating. So a university wanted to help its students eat more vegetables. They decided to test two different slogans for healthy eating to see if one of these slogans would be more effective at improving students' eating habits. So here's how that study went. Here's a quote. One group of students saw the slogan, "Live the healthy way, eat five fruits and veggies a day." Another group saw each and every dining hall tray needs five fruits and veggies a day. Both slogans encouraged people to eat fruits and vegetables, but the tray slogan did so using a trigger. The students lived on campus and many of them ate in dining halls that used trays, so we wanted to see if we could trigger healthy eating behavior by using the dining room tray to remind students of the slogan, end quote. At the end of the study, the results were clear. The slogan that mentioned the word tray made students eat 25% more fruits and vegetables, while the one that just mentioned healthy eating had no effect. I guess when students were looking at their trays in the cafeteria, they must have remembered that healthy eating message, so the trigger worked. Now, in a different book called Persuasion, Professor Robert Cialdini reveals the hidden power our mental associations have over us. He says a study was done in a wine store. They wanted to see if the type of music in the store had any effect on sales. What they found was very surprising. On days when they played classical German music in the store, sales of German wine went up. And on days they played classical French music, sales of French wine went up. And by the way, I definitely recommend you also look at our summary of the excellent book Persuasion by Robert Cialdini, which you can find at growth.me. So a summary of this lesson. Our memory of a product or brand can be triggered by another thing. For example, Kit Kat chocolate bars made coffee into a trigger for their product and sales increased by $200 million. So brainstorm what everyday object or activity you could turn into a trigger for your product. Now lesson five. Arouse strong emotions like outrage and more people will share. The New York Times website publicly shows which of their articles are most emailed every day. So Jonah Berger wanted to find out why some articles were shared more through these emails and why other articles were not shared. So what he did is he kept track of which articles were in this most emailed list for 6 months. And at the end of it, he did an academic analysis. He found people were far more likely to share an article through email if it aroused strong emotions in them. Now, it didn't matter if those emotions were positive emotions like excitement and happiness or negative emotions like anger and anxiety. It only mattered if the emotions were strong or weak. Articles that only made people feel weak emotions like sadness or contentment were not shared. If you feel a very strong emotion inside your body, then you're more likely to take action to release that emotion by sharing, commenting, or even protesting in the streets, as some people do. Clever politicians have long known that strong emotions inspire people to action. In the book The True Believer, Eric Hoffer explains how leaders of mass movements like the Nazis and communists used passionate hate as a tool to provoke their followers to action. Eric Hoffer said, quote, "Mass movements can spread without belief in a God, but never without belief in a devil," end quote. So if you're interested in the psychology of politics, then check out our summary of that book too. That was The True Believer by Eric Hoffer. So if you're writing an article that you want to be shared more, ask yourself, will this article make someone's heart beat faster? Will it make them have butterflies in their stomach? Does it take their breath away? Or would it make their blood boil? Summary of this lesson: people were far more likely to email New York Times articles to their friends when the article aroused strong emotions. Those emotions could be positive, like excitement and joy, or negative, like anxiety and anger. To release the pressure of the strong emotions, people take action by sharing, commenting, or even protesting. Now lesson 6. Influence people's behavior with emotional images, not statistics. Here's a quote. "Most teens don't smoke because they think it's good for them, and most people who scarf down a Big Mac and large fries and wash it down with a supersized Coke are not oblivious to the health risks. So additional information probably won't get them to change their behavior. They need something more." And that is where emotions come in. Rather than harping on features or facts, we need to focus on feelings, the underlying emotions that motivate people to action, end quote. Humans are not very rational or logical, even though we often pretend to be. We're mostly driven by our emotions, and afterwards our brains create rational explanations for our behaviors. So when you're trying to influence someone, you'll be far more effective by hitting them in the emotions rather than feeding their mind new facts or statistics. And by the way, influence is not always negative. There are many kinds of positive influence and even positive propaganda. For example, governments were trying for years to decrease the number of smokers. They'd been telling people how bad smoking was with little effect. And then they tried another approach that is more visual and emotional. You see, in many countries, cigarette packs must now have disgusting photos printed on the packs. So every time a smoker goes for a cigarette, they see this image of black lungs or gross cancer tumors, along with text saying this is the result of smoking for 10 or 20 years. The strong emotion of disgust now starts to become linked with the cigarettes in people's minds, and perhaps as a direct result of this, fewer people smoke than ever before. Here's another example. The New York City Health Department wanted people to drink less soda. They could have talked about calories and how drinking soda causes obesity, but facts are boring. So they tried a different approach aimed at making people feel different about soda. They produced a video ad showing a guy literally drinking fat. It's a big glass of gooey, sticky, lumpy, gross, white fat, and he chugs it down. Now, this disgusting visual image is hard to forget, and for many people, Coke will now be a trigger for that image. If you want to take a look at that ad for yourself, it's also on the written book summary page at growth.me. Summary of this lesson: people are naturally more motivated by emotions than logical arguments. For example, governments began printing disgusting images of black lungs on cigarette packs. They found the emotion of disgust tied to those images was more effective than numbers, facts, and statistics. Now lesson 7. Make people use your product in public, not private. Here's a quote. "The more others seem to be doing something, the more likely people are to think that thing is the right or normal and what they should be doing as well," end quote. If you want your message, product, or brand to spread virally, then make it public. This means your current customers, should be seen using your product in some public and visible way. People are social animals. We copy what we see others doing, but if nobody can see others using your product, then it'll not be able to spread socially. In the book The Lean Startup, Eric Ries explains the three growth engines every business can use to grow. One of those is viral spread. He says many tech companies like Apple and Facebook deliberately aim to make their products as viral as possible by making them public. For example, most earbuds were black, so Apple made theirs white. I think that gave users of Apple products a way to publicly show that they have an iPhone or iPod in their pocket. And this also happened when they added the text sent from my iPhone. They added that to every bottom of every email sent from an iPhone. By the way, if you're interested in making your own startup business, then the most often recommended book for that is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. And we have a summary of that at growth.me, so go check it out. Here's another example. Hotmail was a free email service that struggled for many years. And then one day they added a link to the bottom of all their users' emails that said, "Get your free email at hotmail.com." Essentially, each of their users was now advertising Hotmail to all their friends and contacts. What happened was Hotmail's growth exploded. They soon went from like 1 or 2 million users to 12 million users, and they were bought by Microsoft for $400 million. Another example is athlete sponsorships. Why do companies like Nike pay individual athletes millions of dollars to wear their clothing? Because the athletes wear the clothes in public in front of millions of viewers who are watching on TV. Not only is that showing the public usage of Nike shoes, but the athlete is also a hero to many young people. So the young people obviously want to copy their role model, which makes them even more likely to buy the shoes. Nike's huge growth over the past 20 years is good proof this marketing strategy works. And by the way, if you want to hear more about how Nike succeeded and their story, then go see our summary of Shoe Dog, a book written by Nike's founder, Phil Knight. It's very inspiring. Summary of this lesson is, people are social animals. We naturally copy what we see others doing. So make your product something that is used in a publicly visible way and not private. For example, Hotmail added a short link at the bottom of each of their users' emails, and that exploded their growth. And now lesson 8, create useful and practical content to increase shares. Information that helps people in a practical way is much more likely to be shared. In his New York Times article analysis, Jonah Berger also found that useful articles were 30% more likely to hit that most emailed list. And that makes sense. I mean, everyone wants to help their friends, so if you see an article that may help them, then you want to share it. Now, the famous copywriter Gary Bensavenga said the secret to successful advertising is to, quote, make your advertising itself valuable, end quote. By that, he meant people have been bombarded so much with advertising that they're mostly blind to it. But if your advertising or even your social media posts, they offer some truly valuable information inside, then it will not be ignored. He said, ideally, people should find your ads so useful that they cut it out of the newspaper to save it. In this internet age, that philosophy has transformed into something called content marketing. For example, the company Seattle Coffee Gear sells coffee makers and coffee beans online. And so they started a YouTube channel that now has almost 200,000 subscribers. Their videos educate people how to pick great quality coffee beans, how to brew better coffee, how to choose the best coffee machine. So people who are looking for better coffee and better coffee techniques, they will be attracted by the useful content, and then some of them will end up becoming customers of Seattle Coffee Gear. Summary of this lesson: people today are bombarded with clickbait and noisy advertising. To stand out, provide them with information they can use today in some practical way. For example, if you sell coffee makers, then show people how to pick the best coffee beans. Now lesson 9, put information within stories which are more easily shareable. For thousands of years before humans could read or write, we shared stories. And these stories were not simply entertainment, they carried important messages inside them. Stories, allowed information, knowledge, and morals to be transmitted down through generations. Let's use a very, very simple example to illustrate this. I'm sure you've heard the three little pigs story before, right? If you haven't, here's what it is. Three little pigs built three houses. So the first two pigs were lazy and they wanted a fast house, so they built it from straw and wood. And then a big bad wolf came along and then he blew their houses down quite easily. And I'm not sure if this happens in the story, but it's implied that the wolf ate them, which is a little dark for a kid's story. Actually, no. They ran to the third pig's house. And the third pig had carefully built his house with bricks. So when the wolf came, he huffed and puffed, but he couldn't blow this brick house down. So of course, that's a cute story, but there's important lessons hidden within it that kids pick up on, even subconsciously. You know, like if you think in the long term, then you're more likely to survive and be successful. The psychologist Jordan Peterson wrote a textbook called Maps of Meaning that explains this in great detail. He studied all sorts of religious myths for many years and discovered that underneath the stories were some very deep truths about existence and about morality and philosophy. What's even more fascinating is that these deep truths were found across cultures and across religions. And you would see these connections when you know how to analyze the myths. For example, every culture has some type of myth where there's a hero figure who must voluntarily face unknown danger and transform that chaos into order. Okay, let's go back to the business world and look at a practical example. Subway had a brilliant ad campaign many years ago based on a story. They found a guy called Jared who'd lost 245 pounds by eating Subway subs. So this is a very surprising story that people could easily remember and share because it was different. It was new. I can just imagine coworkers all over the country saying, mentioning things like, "Hey, did you hear that Subway guy who lost so much weight eating subs?" So this Subway story spread far and wide, and Subway just launched a huge campaign advertising this everywhere. It was a huge success for their sales. Now, let me tell you, a marketing campaign where they directly said Subway is healthy, that would not have been nearly as successful or compelling. Summary of this lesson: humans are designed to share stories. It's how wisdom was passed down for millions of years before we could read or write. So think of how you could embed your message within a story, like Subway, which told the story of Jared losing 245 pounds eating their subs. In conclusion, we've reached the end of this book summary. Next time you're about to post on social media, keep those six principles in mind. So now you know what makes people share. The next step is to really use this information, and that means stopping for a second to think how can you make each of your individual posts a little more shareable before you click publish. And if you enjoyed this book, then I also recommend Robert Cialdini's books. We have a summary of his book Persuasion so far. Or look at the book Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath. So those authors also write about psychology and marketing in a fascinating way. And I'll see you in the next book summary.